This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is Fantasy Football Today from CBS Sports.
What a play!
Can you believe this?
No, I can't.
It's time to dominate your fantasy league.
Off to the races, and he stays on his feet.
This is going to go.
Now, here's some combination of Adam, Dave, Jamie, and Heath.
It is a Tuesday morning, and we've got one of our favorite guests. I feel bad for all the other guests, but Rich Rebar is like tier one. He is a tier one guest on our show, and we've got him on today, Lord Reeves, on Twitter. We also have Dave Richard, who is working through, as you all know, working through some technical issues. So he is in a different room with a different setup, and he sounds a little bit off.
You can say it, Adam. I'm in a closet.
Yeah, you're in a closet, and you sound terrible. But that's okay, because we're going to fix it today, and hopefully everything will be fine. Well, hopefully. We're going to try to fix it today. And we have a version of Heath that I'm really glad I didn't grow up with. I think he's insufferable Celtics fan, Heath. Coming off a win last night, gloating. He's got this, like, gloating pep in his step. Insufferable Celtics fan Heath, welcome to the show.
First off, I want to apologize for enjoying something. I know that really bothers you when I'm happy about something. I will try to not do that anymore. Second, we had a guest on yesterday. I'm just curious, was that guest introduced as a tier one guest, or was it just Rich?
Well, that guest was Ben Gretsch, and he showed up a half hour late, so he dropped a tier too.
He's dropped a tier.
Absolutely. But I've been reading Rich's Dynasty tiers this morning, so I guess I just have tears on the brain. So, Rich, you're at sharpfootballanalysis.com. You're at Lord Reeves, R-E-E-B-S, on Twitter. Any other, I don't like when people say, hey, well, it's 50 minutes into the show. Now tell us how we can find you. Tell us now, like, how do you want people to find you, your content? Promote yourself.
Yeah, all my work is at Sharp Ball Analysis, and you nailed it. The Twitter is at Lord Reeves. No Facebook, no Instagram, no TikToks. And listen, me and Pocket Aces, go way back here as a pair. So I appreciate him still putting me in tier one. I got to do something with Dave last year on the show. I got to meet him in Canton, too, for a little bit. Heath, I've never done anything with. We did like 1 5-minute segment on the CBS thing last year with Mike Conley, and we were clearly the chum on that segment. So we need to move out of the way. But so I'm excited to talk with Heath too, because I've been following Heath for a long time.
Well, yeah, we've definitely had some social media interactions. You've given me a new courage just in like the first paragraph of your Dynasty tiers. There's a sentence here, and it says, "There is some overlap to actual player rankings, but these tiers do not specifically follow the rankings, rather archetypes." Yeah. And I have struggled with that in my because I do Dynasty rankings, which I released last week, and tiers are coming out tomorrow or the day after. And I like that idea better than the way that I've done tiers here recently. So I may just borrow that a little bit.
Yeah, so I've always done, and I do this for seasonal too, I've always believed in like grouping players, how they score points and how they matter, because that's how you get kind of true arbitrage, right? In your dynasty, in not in just dynasty, but in fantasy football. You know, if you have a guy like, I want to say, like, let's say DJ Moore, right, is going at wide receiver 12, but you've got like a guy like Terry McLaurin going like 15 spots after him. The target shares are similar. They're guys that have quarterback issues, like similar stuff like that. So if you're able to spot kind of gaps and inefficiencies in ADP that way, and then in dynasty, you know, I'm looking for the same things. Then you have player age kind of influx in the dynasty, where it's not as huge as a thing in seasonal. So it really adds a different element to like the dynasty tiers and dynasty rankings. So there isn't like a full overlap. And you have a guy like Travis Kelce, who's approaching age 33, but still has one of the higher probabilities to be tight end one and actually impact an individual fantasy season more than a guy like TJ Hockenson, who's like 25 years old, but you're getting 8 years of runway of leverage. There's still a gap in terms of like in dynasty, what one player means for your roster at a specific time versus another in a startup. And there's like all these different elements layered into dynasty. That's what makes dynasty football so great.
Okay. There were a lot of vocabulary words I didn't really understand there. So I think I'm going to have to, you guys are going to have to lay it out for me with examples a little bit later. But my first question for you is, after the NFL draft, what was the biggest, I don't know, maybe the headline of your dynasty rankings and tiers, whether it was where you put Breece Hall or the rookie wide receivers, or where you moved a veteran up or down? What was the biggest change or biggest story in your dynasty rankings or tiers after the NFL draft, Rich?
I think the player that had the biggest movement was Rashad Bateman. You know, this was a guy that was going to be basically entering year two, still kind of in like a log jam in a Ravens offense that basically we saw throughout the course of the draft. They still want to be the Ravens that Greg Roman wants the Ravens to be. So him just getting Marquise Brown out of the way now allows him to go to being like a 12% target share player to basically being able to push 20% or higher if he proves that he is the type of target earner we believe that he can get to. So I think he was the kind of the biggest winner. I will say too, like a lower frame winner was Darnell Mooney, just because Darnell Mooney is the kind of archetype of wide receiver, more of like a vertical splash play guy that could be impacted by another good wide receiver. Like if the Bears would have landed a George Pickens type of guy like that. So them just adding Velus Jones, and we're not going to turn this into Velus Jones things. He's like the guy on Twitter like wants to bury. But for the Bears not to really invest at wide receiver, it gives Darnell Mooney just like this huge target runway again this season.
Would you guys, I'll start with Dave, in Dynasty rather have Rashad Bateman or Marquise Brown? And they are in the same tier for Rich, I see. But Dave, would you rather have Rashad Bateman or Marquise Brown in Dynasty?
I worry about the situation that Bateman is in because it's the situation that Brown used to be in. And the target share could be 20%. Rich nailed it. But that's a Ravens team that doesn't like to throw the ball a ton. Last year they did. Because all their running backs got hurt, they really had no other choice but to throw it, and they really went crazy with it. I think they go back to being 50-50 pass run. There's only been one wide receiver in the last 5 years in Baltimore that's had over 100 targets, and it was Brown, and it was last year when they were throwing like crazy. So Bateman might be great, but he's going to have to be hyper-efficient to be an excellent fantasy wide receiver. I think he's going to be useful as a number three. I'd rather have like the next 2 to 3 years of Brown, because I think he can be really good in Arizona, because that's the type of offense that I want my wide receiver to be in.
Heath?
Yeah, I'll go with Brown. It's funny. He was saying that Bateman was a winner, and I completely agreed. And then I looked at my rankings, and I do have several of the rookies ahead of him. Most of those, I try to keep a running schedule. Where were they last month? Where were they the month before? And you see when you add the rookies in, you see almost everybody outside of the top 25 wide receivers is a loser because they all fell 5 or 6 spots because there were 5 or 6 wide receivers that went in before them. Bateman actually was wide receiver 31 for me last month. He's wide receiver 31 right now, but he did go up 6 spots. It's just that there are rookies that were ahead of him. I still like Brown. I love, and I did this last year. I really like the narrative of like player A's QB went and talked management into bringing player B to the team. And I would expect the target share for Marquise Brown is going to be very good. I was going to say my biggest loser since Rich did the winners, and it was DeAndre Hopkins. Just because, and what he talked about with the way he tiers players helps this tension a little bit. But there's such a tension in dynasty rankings between how valuable is this player for a contender, how valuable is this player for someone who's not really contending this year. And DeAndre Hopkins' value was almost entirely on the contender side of that equation. I would say if you're not one of the 4 or 5 best teams in the league, you should not have DeAndre Hopkins on your team right now. You should probably have traded him last year. And now we've got a situation where he's not going to be there for the first month and a half of the season. While there was already a little bit of uncertainty because his target share was so low last year, they bring in Marquise Brown. I'm terrified to have DeAndre Hopkins on my team in Dynasty.
Okay. So, all right, we'll come back to that a little bit later when we talk about the differences in the rankings and the tiers and whatnot. But let me tell you about our merchandise store, the CBS Sports store. We're giving away, not giving away, we're selling t-shirts, mugs, sweatpants, laser engraved pint glasses, hats, water bottles, and more with the Fantasy Football Today logo on it. And you can remind your buddies how you got the inside scoop to crush them in your fantasy leagues. And FFT listeners are going to get 20% off their order when they use this podcast exclusive code, FantasyFootball20. FantasyFootball20 during checkout. So, again, go to the CBS Sports store and get some awesome gear. Heath has the sweatpants. I have the long sleeve t-shirt. Dave, what do you have? What's your Fantasy Football Today item?
My daughter stole one of she stole my retro Fantasy Football Today logo t-shirt, and she wears it to school. And she says, "Dad, all the male teachers are coming up to me now, asking me where I got this shirt." And she says, "It's creepy." I said, "Stop wearing that shirt to school and they'll stop talking to you." And she said, "Okay." By the way, do we have a Fantasy Football Today closet organizer? Because this room needs some work.
We might. And if we do, you can get 20% off with the promo code FantasyFootballToday20. Only available for our listeners. We got a link to the store in the episode description. Go ahead and shop now. News and notes. Heath, Mike Davis to the Ravens. Sony Michel to the Dolphins. Do you think either of these guys matter, or do they just muck it up for others?
My first instinct was that Mike Davis going to the Ravens would make you feel a little bit better if you were concerned about J.K. Dobbins and how well he was progressing. But then I remembered that if Mike Davis is the backup, the starter always gets hurt. So I'm not sure if it's better for Dobbins. But no, I don't think that this hopefully won't matter at all. Hopefully Dobbins and Gus are fine in the first couple weeks of training camp and they can get back to the 1-2 punch that they intended.
But something's up, right? Because they were looking at Melvin Gordon and they drafted Tyler Bateman.
I just kind of assumed they ran out of running backs last year and they don't want to do that again. Like, we don't want to have to go get Latavius Murray and Le'Veon Bell and Devontae Freeman, but maybe I'm wrong.
All right, so Rich, let me ask you about the Dolphins signing Sony Michel, a capable running back. I mean, did a nice job filling in for Darrell Henderson last year. Does this limit the upside of Chase Edmonds? Because, you know, people figure, well, Raheem Mostert's going to get hurt, right? But the Cardinals were hesitant to really turn Chase Edmonds loose unless they didn't seem to have an option, right? So do you think that this makes Chase Edmonds less appealing, the signing of Sony Michel to a one-year deal?
Well, I mean, the archetype, bringing up archetypes, I guess that's going to be the word of the show. If this is Sesame Street, I guess. But, the archetype of Chase Edmonds, what hurts Chase Edmonds. You just have to be a really special running back at Chase Edmonds' size to have the full-fledged support of a coaching staff to give you, like, the ironclad amount of touches, right? Like, you have to be – Austin Eckler's, like, the most recent guy, and it took him basically 6 years to kick that door down to be that type of guy. You look at Chase Edmonds, he's a 200-pound back. He's smaller. He's been always worked in unison with an early down or short yard grinder. He has 6 career carries inside the 5-yard line. And he's got 1 career rushing touchdown inside the 5-yard line. Because coaches see that archetype of running back. It's not these guys aren't capable of doing it, but coaches get like caught up in the stuff, with these players and these sizes. And they want to bring in, the Joshua Kellys of the world, or, that's why the Cardinals added James Conner last year. So adding a guy like Sony Michel, who can be kind of that early down grinder, when you add 2 guys like Mostert and Chase Edmonds, who are really good in that wide zone scheme, they're really good at taking their speed to the edges. They really fit what they want to do. But when it's 3rd and 1 and you just want to run a guy up the middle, you've seen it. It's because Kyle Shanahan did this with Mostert in San Francisco too. He would get pulled routinely inside the 5-yard line for Jeff Wilson. So, I mean, it's just the thing with Chase Edmonds. His upside is kind of capped just based on the type of player he is, but it's a great scheme fit. He's going to catch passes. We just need to know if Chase Edmonds is going to get those money touches. Because if he's not going to score touchdowns, then on a week-to-week basis, what are we really getting?
All right, a couple of more news items here. The Giants released James Bradbury. He'll be a starting cornerback somewhere. And Tom Brady is going to be Fox's lead NFL analyst after he retires. I don't really think, Dave, I'm going to say, I don't think he's going to be great at it. I think he's going to be a little bit too nice.
I just don't know why he would put himself through that.
Put himself through that? He's going to make $20 million a year. He's going to make so much money. I don't know what the contract is, but it's going to be insane.
Mm-hmm. Dave, do you remember?
And he can make he can make money putting his name on anything. I don't know why he wants to put in the time and effort to be on broadcasts.
You do. You remember when we were doing work from home?
Yes.
Do you remember when you were had your tent and you were camped out just outside the sidewalk of the office waiting for the first day that they would let you come into the office and work in the office?
I was working in the office before they let me work in the office. That's how bad.
I don't think Tom Brady wants to work from home.
Oh, I see.
I think he took a month off and he was like, you know what? I like going to work.
Yeah, some people like working. Weirdos. Anyway, a quick question here from the chat from L. Wood. Where can one find Lord Reeves's tears?
SharpFootballAnalysis.com. There's no paywall on anything for the offseason. It's just open. Anything I put out will be just out there in them streets.
Excellent. Okay, let's get into the dynasty rankings. We're going to compare Heath and Rich's dynasty rankings. There are too many differences to really get into everything, but I picked a couple. And there's a link to the tiers in the chat, apparently. Shraggy B put a link in the chat. There it is. So just click that link and you'll have his tiers. Okay, anyway. Start a quarterback. Just some of the differences I noticed here. Heath has Jalen Hurts 9th, one spot ahead of Russell Wilson. And Rich has Hurts in a big tier 4, which would be lower than where Heath has him, but in a tier with Tua Tagovailoa, Kenny Pickett, and almost all of the year 2 quarterbacks, not Davis Mills, but Fields, Lance, Lawrence, maybe Mac Jones. So Rich is lower on Jalen Hurts, but putting him in that tier with the unproven player, let's call it that, the unproven tier, that's interesting that you put Jalen Hurts there. Rich, why did you do that?
Well, in the actual rankings, I do have Hurts 12, because remember, the tiers aren't actually the rankings.
Right.
But the reason that Hurts is there is just because he still has a non-zero chance to not be starting next year. Now, I'm a believer in Hurts, especially from a fantasy stance. I mean, this is 100% my brand. The Konami code I wrote in 2013 about mobile quarterbacks and the rushing upside for quarterbacks, and that's turned into kind of a thing now to these days. So, I mean, as long as Hurts is playing and he's starting, like, I want to be invested into Hurts. It's just that there still is a non-zero chance, and the Eagles have built themselves with outs. So the Eagles have prepared themselves for the optimal situation that Hurts is good, but they've also insulated themselves for the situation that Hurts isn't good. And that's what I kind of like about the structure that Howie Roseman's had this offseason. But I am still a pro Hurts fantasy option.
Heath, are you not baking in the risk that Jalen Hurts struggles this year and then they replace him in Philadelphia?
I think that risk was lowered by their draft and the acquisition of A.J. Brown. I may be overlooking that just a little bit. But I think having the weapons that he does around him makes it more likely that he's successful. I think this is probably a playoff team again, just because if you look at the NFC, there aren't very many teams that look like they could be playoff teams. I think there is some risk there. I think the other thing is, and my rankings are built for one quarterback leagues, and I talk about like players that have risk, or when you're worried about floor, matters a lot more in a super flex league or a two quarterback league than it does in a one quarterback league, even in dynasty. I don't really care too much about what the risk is in a one quarterback league. I just want the upside that Hurts has. And so, yeah, I think it's tough to compare him to those second year quarterbacks. I think if you were sorting by archetype, that's perfect. Put him with those guys. It makes perfect sense. He's in that group. I'd put him at the top of the group. If somebody wanted to put him in the middle of the group, I wouldn't argue it. He has more risk than Lance and Fields and Lawrence, just because they're going to have a longer runway to try to be good. Their teams aren't going to go away from them after this year, I don't believe. But I also feel like he has a little bit more safety in that we've seen him have success. And those guys, I mean, we saw Lance for a game, about a game and a half, but those guys have really struggled, and their teams didn't do enough to make me feel like they were going to be good this year. So, like, I feel more confident if Hurts is playing, he is going to be good for my fantasy team. I feel more confident they're going to get a longer chance to be good.
Dave, do you think Justin Fields and Trey Lance have a long leash, or do you think that these two teams, the Bears and the 49ers, could jump back into the quarterback market if those guys struggle this year, that they could jump back in 2023, beginning with the NFL draft, which as of now, if you look at mock drafts, you might see 6 or so quarterbacks in the first round, maybe 4 in the top 10 or so. As of now, things change so much in a year, but it looks like a very strong rookie class coming in. Do you feel that way with Lance? Definitely with Lawrence. Like, they're not moving on from Lawrence. But do you feel that way with Lance and Fields? Like, these guys are going to be the starting quarterbacks at least for two more years, or are they on the hot seat, I guess, as QBs?
I think you can make the case that they're on the hot seat. And in the case of Fields, it's funny that you bring this up, because I was on Pat Fitzmaurice's podcast yesterday, and we talked about Justin Fields and how he could be out of Chicago. Think about it. The new coaching staff and front office that's there had no business in drafting Fields in the first place. They have surrounded him with nothing. Okay, Darnell Mooney is his number one receiver. Rich already talked about how many targets he could potentially have this year. Hopefully he can catch more than the 53% or whatever he had last year from Justin Fields. But the Bears, if they're tanking this year like we're thinking they're tanking, they're going to have an early first-round pick. And they can justify moving on from Justin Fields because the new coaching staff and the new front office will get the quarterback that they want, and that they could feasibly trade Justin Fields to another team. So I think it's realistic to think that if Justin Fields has a bad year, or maybe even just like a solid year statistically, but the Bears don't win, that Chicago moves on from him. I don't know what's going on in San Francisco with Trey Lance. I think they want to move on from Garoppolo, but he had this shoulder surgery, and now they can't move him. And am I 100% sure that everybody from the top down in 49er land bought into Trey Lance? No, I'm not. And if he goes out there this year and he stinks and the 49ers miss the playoffs, they could potentially move on from him too. It's kind of crazy that they would move on that quickly from these quarterbacks who have tons of potential. And I would still think they both have a chance to be good with new teams. But this is the world that the NFL is living in now, and they're moving on from guys pretty quickly.
The Lance one is the one that I struggle with the most. I don't know exactly what's going on in Chicago, and Dave's right. The regime's not married to him. They gave up so much to go get Lance that it feels like he should have a longer past this year for sure. But also, for as long as Jimmy Garoppolo's on the roster, I feel like he might be like an 0-3 start away from Jimmy starting again, just with the way Shanahan is.
So he might be on the bench for week one, Heath.
Yeah, that doesn't. I guess it's possible.
If Garoppolo's ready and Lance isn't great in camp in the preseason, I have no doubt that Jimmy Garoppolo is your week one starter in San Francisco.
Let's go to our next quarterback topic here. Let's talk about Matthew Stafford. I'll give Heath the first word here. Where are you on Matthew Stafford, who was a top six quarterback last year, 6th in 4-point, 5th in 6-point per game? He was 11th in 4-point per passing touchdown leagues. Stafford was 8th best in 6-point per passing touchdown leagues. A little bit of a difference. I don't know if it's rankings or tiers, so I might be corrected a lot in today's show, but we'll try it anyway. It looks like Rich is higher on Matthew Stafford than Heath. Go ahead, Heath. I think you have him 14th in your dynasty rankings.
Yeah, I think, again, another guy who's probably better in the super flex or two quarterback format than he is in the one quarterback. I think he's going to be a low-end number one quarterback who is very solid. I don't really think it's very likely he gives you a top five season at any point in his career. Maybe he gives you a top five stretch in the second half of the season and wins you a league. That's possible. But I think he's mostly going to be a low-end starting quarterback that you should value more if you're a contender than if you're not. And you should value more in super flex or two QB leagues than you should in one.
Rich.
Yeah, I echo all that. I mean, I also have Stafford 14. Just to circle back to the Justin Fields thing, the Bears and the way they've had to operate this offseason should be a great warning example to organizations of not really kind of go all in on the guy who needs to have a great season to kind of save his job, right? Because this only puts you behind the next regime behind the eight ball. So hopefully we see some teams kind of learn some lessons from that, but I doubt that it happens.
Just don't be like the Bears. That's the lesson.
Rich was like, yeah, Adam, stupid question on Stafford. Let me talk about Justin Fields a little bit more.
You're fine. I could see how like the tiers make it look like those are rankings, but I mean, actually I have Stafford 14, which is locked in. He's a mid-30s-year-old quarterback that is probably going to be a low in QB1, not flirt with being the QB1 overall. So, I mean,
Hey, you know what?
Lock it up.
I like it. We have a lot in common. All right, so let's go to running back. Where do you have Javonte Williams, Rich?
I have him third overall.
Okay. I think we could debate here because Heath has him sixth. Is that a huge difference? No, but Heath. Oh, come on. Wait.
No, I've not moved him at all. I do still have him sixth. I feel like every time I look at that group between two and six, I want to rank them differently. Like I could make the argument for every one of those backs between two through six for being number two. I'm just glad we have Jonathan Taylor, so we all agree on number one. But yeah, like Williams, Swift, Najee, Breece Hall, and Christian McCaffrey, just because of the upside that he has. Like I have all those guys in that same range. I've got Javonte at the bottom right now. I feel a little bit more hopeful about Harris is probably going to be a workhorse back and stay in that spot. I think I feel better about Hall being that than I do Williams. And I like him just a little bit better as a prospect, and he's a little bit younger.
All right.
So the one thing I'll say about Williams that does give a little bit of pause is if you watch Williams, he runs like he's a 230-pound guy, but he's not. He's like a mid 210s guy. He's like, I think he was like 214 at the combine or 212. But he is like a punishing runner for like his size. And I wonder if that like the Broncos always want to have that guy next to him just because of the style that he runs with at his size. Like he's not like Najee's 230, you know, and it's one thing when you're running into people at 230 versus like that 212. And I just wonder if that's always going to be in the kind of the back of the minds, because he's like, he gets comped to Nick Chubb a lot, but Nick Chubb is way bigger. So it's, I wonder if that's always going to be a thing with Javonte.
That is so interesting that you say that, because that is what Emory Hunt said about him last year. Why Emory was a little bit lower on Javonte Williams, because he said he didn't like how he just always invited contact. Basically, he just ran into it. And some analysts really liked that about him, and Emory was a little bit concerned about that. So that's actually a pretty interesting viewpoint there. What was my other running back note here comparing the two, Riches and Heaths? I had to take a pause to put the time code in for that Heath sigh, because I am absolutely, Greg saying in the chat, save that Heath sigh, LOL. I am absolutely saved. That was one of the best ones. That was an epic Heath sigh. All right, this group of... I don't know if they're older, because you know running backs are still they're considered old. But Heath has Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, and Saquon Barkley, 13th, 14th, and 15th, respectively. Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, Saquon Barkley. Rich has them in his second tier. If those were rankings, they would be 8th, 9th, and 11th, I believe. But you tell me, Rich, are you higher on Cook, Kamara, and Barkley than Heath is? He has them 13th through 15th.
So a lot of those younger guys we talked about, I have higher, because you're treating like in ranks, because you know you treat rankings kind of like it's a startup, right? And like, you know, if I'm drafting, I'm going to definitely take Breece Hall over those guys if I'm starting a team, just because of the way the running back kind of landscape is. But also those players immediately are in contention to flirt with like top five running back seasons this particular season in 2022. And we know that high scoring running backs provide the most immediate leverage. Now, Cooper Kupp was the first wide receiver to knock that door down in a while. But in terms of positional leverage in an individual season, the top running backs dictate wins and losses a lot more in fantasy football. So those guys still offer that leverage. Also, I'm waiting to see like when we have like a group of running backs, and maybe this is the group in Dynasty that kind of pushes back on like the running backs being good past like maybe age 28 to maybe 30, because we went through a period where the league just didn't give us an influx of good running back talent and we didn't get there. But a lot of us played fantasy football in an era where we had Marshawn Lynch, Jamal Charles, LaShawn McCoy, those guys turning in RB1 seasons approaching 30. So I wonder if some of these some guys from this tier can still sneak through and give us some a bit of longevity here and kind of kick down that door of being like, oh, this guy's 26, like get him the hell out of here.
Yeah, I actually I try to do a little exercise, not a physical exercise, obviously everybody knows that's not the case, before the show started, and I think we're now five straight years where every top five running back in PPR has been 26 or younger. I believe the last one to do it at 27 or older was LaShawn McCoy 6 years ago when I think he was 28. But so that's just something to keep in mind. If you're looking for a top five running back, they're almost always 26 or younger. Dave, I'll get you in here after I read this question from Scott in the chat. What does Rich think of DeAndre Swift? What do you think of DeAndre Swift, Rich?
I love him. I think he has the upside to be the actual RB1 overall in a given fantasy season, especially with his pass catching ability. You just hope that the split falls a little bit more in his favor. I mean, you look at games that he played with Jamal Williams a year ago, like he just has to have a lot more rush pit. You can't have 40% of the team carries and expect to be the RB1, but I do believe that exists in his range of outcomes. He's that kind of fantasy running back.
Dave, what do you think? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, well, just that it's such a weird thing with Javonte and with Swift. I think it's a similar thing. Like, is a coaching staff going to believe that DeAndre Swift can handle that much of the workload? And I feel like the only reason I have Najee in the same tier as those two guys is a coaching staff just gave him all that work. And I kind of wonder if we shouldn't count on that quite as much as we do just on 1 year of evidence. But the fact that a coaching staff gave all that work to Najee versus those two is really something that stands out.
Man, well, that's the Steelers' way. They've shown us, you know, over with Le'Veon and when Le'Veon was out with D'Angelo Williams, like that's the style of football they want to play. They want to just have one back in there.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I think it's just the style that Najee brings, and on top of the pedigree that he has, I think it's all important. But Rich, you talked about lighter running backs. Mm-hmm. DeAndre Swift is one of those guys.
Yep. Mid 210s.
They list him at 210, but if you look at him without pads, man, he looks so unassuming you wouldn't even believe that he's a running back. I know there's a lot of running backs that are like that, but I think that that's got to creep into the head of whoever coaches the Lions. Right now it's Dan Campbell, probably for the meat of this young career of DeAndre Swift, it'll be Dan Campbell. And I think there is concern about him wearing down, and they are going to keep an eye on his touches. That's what keeps him from being an RB1 overall in my mind. I don't think he's got that upside, but he can still be top 10 and maybe even like RB4 or 5. So he's got that potential. I like the direction the Lions are moving in. I'm just worried about how much he'll hold up or how well he will hold up.
Yeah, I think that's why he doesn't crack up there.
I don't know if I'd love to have Swift as a first-round pick in my dynasty startup.
Do you guys think that is going to impact Christian McCaffrey this year after 2 years of him being, you know, 208, 210 and the amount of injuries he had? Now, if you look at his injuries, they've been kind of more like fluky injuries and like just really bad luck instead of like compounding. It's a hamstring. He's re-hurting the same hamstring. But do you think the coaching staff is now going to look at saying, man, this guy's, you know, 208 is and he's broke down 2 years in a row? Do you think they're going to over-attribute that this year or no?
I just think it's like with what we just talked about with the Bears. If you're the coach of the Panthers, you don't have that luxury. Like you can't think about Christian McCaffrey's future because if you don't win 9 games this year, you don't have a future.
But at the same time, I think they know that if they don't have Christian McCaffrey on the field, they're probably not going to win many games. They can't win 9 games with Deontay Foreman and Chuba Hubbard at running back. And I think they brought in Foreman to take some of that, you know, grind carries between the tackles when it's 2nd and 2, or even worse, when it's 1st and goal from the 1 away from McCaffrey, put those touches on him and let him get worn down because he's the bigger back. I don't think it's going to necessarily mean I don't think it's going to like drop his touches by 10%, but I bet it drops his playing time by 10 to maybe even 15%, but he just not being on plays where he might not have gotten the ball anyway. So I do think that the injuries he had 2 years ago were related to each other. Last year, I think it's different. And I'm still worried about him not staying healthy all year long, partially because he hasn't, and partially because his coaching staff knows that they've got to win this year with him. They've got to get him on the field, and they might push him, might ride him a little too hard, and he could break again.
All right, so final question here on running backs. Would you guys rather have Christian McCaffrey, 26 years old, or Najee Harris, 24 years old? I mean, he's older than a lot of the other young guys. Would you rather have Christian McCaffrey or Najee Harris in a dynasty league? Heath?
I've got Najee one spot higher, but like if I had either of them on, that's only a decision that I have to make in the startup, because if I had either of them on my roster, I'm not trading either for the other.
Okay, Dave?
I would take Najee over McCaffrey, and as much as I said about Swift, I think I might be able to talk myself into taking Swift over McCaffrey too.
Rich?
man, that ceiling that Christian McCaffrey gets, he's Marshall Faulk, man. Yeah, like, this is like our closest thing we've had to Marshall Faulk. To me, like, I'll like at least chase the rainbow and probably crash and burn. I like those guys. Like, I like Najee, but like, you look at Najee and he's not going away. That's why I still have Najee in the same tier these guys we're talking about. But like, I mean, Najee, just like, where are the explosive plays? And this goes back to Alabama. Like, all of his fantasy production is literally tied to just being on the field. And to me, there's always fragility to that.
Yep.
Like I said, I'll probably crash and burn it because I want to just be a little more risk averse and chase that kind of unicorn ceiling. But I totally get why, if you're in a startup, you would just take Najee.
And all of these little like warts that we've talked about with these guys we love in the top six running backs. That's why I end up with Breece Hall at number two.
This is why you see so many wide receivers drafted in startups.
Exactly.
Speaking of wide receivers.
This is why you take receivers early.
All right, let's go on to our wide receivers then. We're going to take a quick break on fantasy football today. Talk about some wide receivers. Jaylen Waddle, big difference, I think, in the rankings between Jaylen Waddle with Heath and Rich, and we'll talk about that when we come back on Fantasy Football Today.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome back. We got Rich Rebar joining us here at Lord Reeves on Twitter. And you can find him on sharpfootballanalysis.com. And let's talk about wide receivers and some of the differences here. And there's obviously just so many. So I encourage you to check out Heath's Dynasty Rankings at cbsports.com/fantasy/football and Rich's at Sharp Football Analysis. All right, Jaylen Waddle, Heath, 6th in your Dynasty Rankings. For Rich, tier 5, which I think if you just count the number of players in the first 4 tiers, there are 15 of them, I believe. So Rich, where do you have Jaylen Waddle in your rankings?
I'm in 12 overall. The thing with Waddle is, and I really like Waddle, is that there's just kind of the way his situation is in flux. The way he scored points as a rookie for fantasy football was literally he was a floor plus player, right? Like he was a PPR floor plus player. He relied on targets and getting a low A dot and low receptions. We know he has another gear and he's going to get higher quality of targets here with Mike McDaniel, we assume, but there's going to be less passing volume and he's going to be sharing targets with a career target earner in Tyreek Hill. So I do think there's some fragility in projecting Jaylen Waddle, just the types of targets he's going to get, how stable his floor is going to be. I think in redraft, he's one of the most egregiously priced wide receivers right now in early drafts. I don't think you can take him close to being a wide receiver one. I feel similar to him this year, actually a little worse than I did for CeeDee Lamb. And I was trying to express caution on taking CeeDee Lamb last year where his ADP was. So I do kind of feel like there is a lot of fragility into that's now baked into a situation that a lot of people aren't really factoring in. I mean, we have two targets from Tua Tagovailoa basically priced in as wide receiver ones now in redraft fantasy football for 2022. And that scares the hell out of me.
Right. Yeah. I know. Yeah, it's weird for sure.
I agree completely on the redraft side of it. I think I've got him as a low end number two wide receiver. This might be a little bit of me holding on to what I thought of Waddle coming into the year, but I thought, man, this guy has so much upside. It might take him a while to figure it out. And then he goes out as a rookie and shows us that floor and earns 140 targets as a rookie. And I feel like that solidified the floor enough for me that I can still dream about what the upside and what the skill set presents as possibility. I do think the first year with Tyreek, maybe even the first 2 years, could be a bit of a problem in terms of total targets, but his efficiency is going to go through the roof. And there's just, again, there's a big tier of wide receivers in this same range for me that absolutely could be second or third in the dynasty rankings by the middle of this year, maybe, or by the end of this year, but that have enough concerns of their own.
Like who?
Yeah, we basically have Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, and then there's a cavern. Like those two guys, the cavern from those two guys is very large, and a numerical list is not even going to enforce that.
Well, I mean, I think you've got the older guys like Kupp and Davante Adams, who might be wide receiver one in PPR this year, but also might be one injury away from not being a top 20 wide receiver in Dynasty. You've got flipping AJ Brown, who super duper star, I hope. Can we play 16 games and just have some sort of connection with Jalen Hurts? You've got DK with the unknown quarterback situation. Like, I just think there's a lot of guys in that range that I don't know how they're going to sort out.
I'll get Dave in here. We'll talk about CeeDee Lamb for a bit here. CeeDee Lamb is third for Heath. So it's Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and then CeeDee Lamb third. Rich, what is your take on what happened to CeeDee Lamb late in the season? He was so straight up bad. He was just bad. What do you think happened with CeeDee Lamb?
I think it was a number of compounding issues. I mean, he picked up an ankle injury midseason that kind of got like, because he didn't miss time for it, but, you know, he did pick up an ankle injury. He also then got moved back into being like a slot player when Michael Gallup came back. And then, you know, Dak had a stretch where he didn't play really good football either. So I just think a lot of things kind of compounded on him. I still believe that there's a good player in CeeDee Lamb. And I mean, if you look at like the work like Matt Harmon has done, has shown like he is a guy that wins on his own. But so far, like the majority of his NFL success hasn't really come in like a traditional alpha wide receiver for fantasy type of way, right? Like we haven't seen him just line up, play on the perimeter and win. And until we see that, like people are always going to probably be a little hesitant that he can get there. But it's literally sink or swim for him this year in terms of like being regarded as this like type of alpha wide receiver for fantasy. Mm-hmm.
Dave, CeeDee Lamb third for Heath behind Jefferson and Chase. Where would you put him in Dynasty?
He'd be close to that range. He's still somebody that I would look at as a number one receiver for Dynasty, if only because I think he's going to have a prominent role in the Cowboys passing offense for a long time. And maybe I shouldn't say the Cowboys offense, but a prominent role in an NFL offense for a long time. I think he's good. I think he's capable, like Rich said, and Matt Harmon's research, like he gets open on his own. He can make plays on his own. I remember in training camp last year, we were just, they unloaded highlights of him in practice where the ball is thrown a foot over his head, the defensive back could do nothing about it, and he's coming down with it every single time. We didn't see it come to pass last year. I thought at first that it might have been like a target issue, but he had a lot of targets last year for, a good receiver gets that type amount of targets. He just didn't have a good average on a per-game basis. He was outside of the top 24 among wide receivers and targets per game. I think that reverts this year. There's no Amari Cooper. The receivers that Dallas has right now aren't going to necessarily take work away from him. I don't think that Dalton Schultz is going to take a ton of work away from him. I don't think the run game is going to be so good that they take the ball out of Dak's hands a lot. I think CeeDee Lamb has a chance to be top five among wide receivers in the NFL this year in terms of targets, and he'll catch a lot of them. And I think he just uses volume to his advantage to be one of the better receivers in fantasy. And if he does it this year, then there's a pretty good chance he does it the year after and the year after that. And yeah, that's what you're looking for, is somebody who's a wide receiver one for a long period of time.
Let's talk about the rookie wide receivers here. Maybe we'll get a wide receiver one out of this group. Drake London, Treylon Burks, Wilson, Olave, Jameson Williams. These were all in tier six for Rich. And where did you come out on them? Who's your favorite? And you know, who are some of the veteran wide receivers that you have them ranked with?
Yeah, Rich. So I like Heath kind of alluded to earlier in the show with Bateman. Like I do have like all these guys above like where Bateman is in at least the top five guys, still in like that area. So I have them all as like wide receiver two pluses in Dynasty right now. I always do. I'm someone that operates with like a little bit of, I don't know if pessimism is the right word, but like, you know, I don't assume that anybody's going to be great. Like, in the NFL, like we've seen too many good prospects fail, especially at the wide receiver position. So I have like London the highest at wide receiver 15 right now. But I mean, he's a 21-year-old guy. He's the second youngest wide receiver in this class. He fits like that alpha archetype that we talk about. He can have one of those like stretches where he has multiple 15 touchdown seasons in like kind of his range of outcomes. I think Olave is probably the guy that has the best rookie season. but is the oldest of these guys. He's a non-early declare, and that worked out for him. He said he had like a fringe round one grade last year, and obviously he goes at pick 11. He definitely helped himself there. But historically, like, those have been kind of red flags for guys in terms of like tie breaking. You know, if you look at the non-early declare first round wide receivers over the past decade, I mean, like, Devontae Parker's like the best guy that in like terms of working out. So it does put him in a tricky bucket, but I do think he fell into the best situation and is the best immediate player on the box. And London is just going to accrue so many targets in that offense because they're going to be bad. And Ole Miss Zaccheaus is the second best wide receiver on the team.
Do you think, cause I've been meaning to ask somebody this, do you think that COVID has any impact on how we view the early declare guys for a couple of years?
I wonder if it will be to like this period, just because of what it allowed. I mean, if COVID doesn't happen, Kenny Pickett doesn't get drafted, right? Like literally COVID created this situation for Kenny Pickett to thrive. Right. It's just unique. It's something we're going to have to probably look back on in a couple of years. And like, maybe we readjust that period, but absolutely is something I've thought about.
Yeah. And I wonder if NILs will change things too. And for most of them, they're not going to make as much money in college as they are in the NFL, but they still, you stay a year and you're going to make something. You're going to make significant change. I think Bryce Young was making over $1 million. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I think that's what Nick Saban said. But some of them are going to make serious money in college, so they might stay longer too, just to, you know, be in college and have fun, win a championship, something like that. All right, Heath, is there anything you wanted to add on the? Let's talk about Amon-Ra St. Brown. As I recall, you guys are very split on Amon-Ra St. Brown. Heath, think you have him
wide receiver 33,
like 105th. Right, yeah, okay, 33.
Right behind Bateman and Dotson.
Well, how does that measure up with where you have Amon-Ra St. Brown, Rich?
Yeah, I have him 27, so just a little bit higher.
Damn it. Can you move him up just for the sake of this conversation, please? Like, put him in the top 12 for right now. You can change it back after the show.
I will say though, like, while the rankings are closer, I am probably more on the optimistic glass half full side of Amon-Ra St. Brown.
Yeah.
Just because of the showcase ceiling that he had. I mean, players that showcase that type of ceiling typically are legitimately good. And I also think when you look at the Lions in a vacuum, they cannot run their offense the way they did the front half of 2021. Like, you cannot have, you know, basically 45% of your targets go to your running back and a catch and fall tight end. You just can't. It's not good offense. Like, no NFL offense is going to be good that way. So I would hope to believe that Amon-Ra St. Brown at least opened that up. And then a guy like Jameson Williams is only good for a player like Amon-Ra St. Brown, where he operates. So I do think that there is like a ceiling question for him, maybe, like, big picture. Like, we probably saw the best stretch that he's going to have of his career in that six game right. sample. Like, he probably never goes on a heater like that again. And it just came unoptimal because it conditions. But I'm like, you guys said, the Lions are trending in a good direction here. There's still a chance there could be a quarterback upgrade here at some point too. So I'm still more of the glass half full guy. I'm also the glass half full guy in Gabriel Davis still too. He's like another polarizing dynasty guy. But the players that have shown me they're good, I'm going to tend to believe they're actually good players.
Okay. Heath hates good players, I guess.
Yeah, I really hate Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't like his name or his face. I thought coming in that like he could thrive in the type of role, like if he could end up in a situation where he gets a bunch of targets, he can get open in those short area targets. And he was more efficient in the second half of the year. I just still kind of view him as someone who's probably going to have a bunch of targets to be good for fantasy.
Is he 70 catches, 800 yards and 5 touchdowns every year?
Right.
Ugh, gross.
Well, but no, because if it's 90 catches, then it's 1,000 yards, and it's like it's kind of it's a little bit of a Jarvis Landry type situation, I think.
Sure, I think that's his ceiling though. Is like Jarvis.
Oh gosh, I hope not. That's a pretty low ceiling. What was it again? 70, 800.
Jarvis Landry had top 20 years.
Higher than that.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying like maybe
Jarvis Landry was good.
No, I thought I was talking about the stats that Dave threw out, not Jarvis Landry. Okay. What was 800 yards, 6 touchdowns? That would not be a good
season. But I think Jarvis had a couple of 1,000-yard seasons with a ton of catches. Maybe one of those years he had a lot of touchdowns to go with it. I'm fuzzy on it without looking. You can go and look it up for yourself if you want to.
Landry had, but, I think, the Cutler year. He had a lot of touchdowns, as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Jay Cutler.
And so maybe something like that happens for St. Brown, and that makes him probably like anywhere from a serviceable to a solid starter for a fantasy squad.
I think that's basically how I view him. Like a good, like he might be able to run into, like I said, a heater where you're running a lot of targets, but just like a high floor player, which is why I think we both have him kind of like in that wide receiver three range.
All right. I think that would be good. A good wrap on wide receiver. So let's talk about that catch and fall tight end that Heath, that Rich just referred to here, because Heath has TJ Hockenson fourth. It's Kyle Pitts, Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce, TJ Hockenson ahead of George Kittle and Darren Waller. And you've got Hockenson, Rich, you've got him in tier four, and there are only five tight ends in the first three tiers. It's Pitts, and then it's Andrews, Kittle, Waller, and then the next tier is Kelce. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Kelsey's in his own tier, and obviously we know he's just kind of older, but he's amazing. And then you have Hockenson grouped with eight other tight ends. You have Hockenson, Goddard, Fant, Knox, Albert O, Freiermuth, Irv Smith, Cole Kmet, Trey McBride. And I know, Heath, you wanted me to say his last name, so Okwebunam. I should have said O. Mm-hmm. Sorry about that. But yeah, I guess you don't think all that highly of TJ Hockenson. Is that fair to say? What do you think?
I do. I mean, I have him like, so from a, he's a player that I probably would never draft in a startup, but when you're valuing startup guys, like he has to be valued. Like, you know, if you're starting a team from scratch, he's 3 years younger than George Kittle, almost 4 years younger. He's 5 years younger than Darren Waller. He's 2 years younger than Mark Andrews. So like he gets some bonus points for that, but does he ever impact the fantasy season? That's my question with TJ Hockenson right now. Is right now, does he ever impact individually a fantasy season? I think it's a right question to ask. I mean, this is a guy that's accrued no downfield targets in his career. He has just three. Kyle Pitts has now just three fewer downfield targets in one season than TJ Hockenson did his entire career to this point. He scored one career touchdown outside of the red zone. If there's any fragility, we just talked about Amon-Ra St. Brown. If there's any stickiness to Amon-Ra St. Brown earning targets, the most direct impact that has on a player in that offense is TJ Hockenson. Mm-hmm. So if he loses any fragility and volume, like what do we really have? You know, where is that touchdown score we saw at Iowa? And that could just be a product of where he's been in the NFL. That player could still exist. But we've seen no like real creation in terms of after the catch ability from TJ Hockenson to like have that type of ceiling. That's just kind of where I'm right now. Is I'm kind of in a gray area where the age and the targets look good, the pedigree is still there, but you've got to show me some. So where is the upside?
My favorite part good of this take. Job is the like jumping back and forth on the other side of the net, depending on which side I get to play. Because I spent the entire off season last year just standing on my chair and yelling, stop drafting TJ Hockenson before Mark Andrews. So now I'm going to defend TJ Hockenson. And it really is. It's just, I think there is some value because he's pretty solid number one tight end. He's not someone that I think is going to leave you in a position where you have to stream. And I think he's probably going to get to do this job for the next 5 years. I would much rather have Kittle and Waller if I'm trying to win a championship this year. But if I'm not, I don't really want Kittle or Waller on my roster.
Right.
So that's why he ends up just ahead of them. And I feel a little bit more confident that he is what he is than Schultz or Goddard or Freiermuth or Kmet or Fant. Like those guys, I think might be the same thing as Hockenson. And a couple of them might have a little more upside. But in terms of like what fantasy production they're going to give you, I feel a little more secure in Hockenson's than I do theirs, just mostly because they haven't done it as much.
All right, Dave, jump in.
I think Hockenson's got the potential to be a little bit better than what he's been statistically. He's at 1.48 yards per route run in 2021. That's ugly. You're looking at a tight end that he either needs volume or a lot of red zone targets in order to be helpful for your fantasy squad. He was getting that at the beginning of the year. Remember, the first 2 weeks of the season, he was a dynamo. Mm-hmm. But we've seen him get banged up over the course of his career. We've seen him disappear for stretches over the course of his career. Maybe that's just part of the deal when you're with the Detroit Lions. I'm not sure. I think he's going to play in the NFL and catch passes in the NFL for the next 5 years. It's just, does he have the upside to still be a George Kittle? I'm probably going to lean toward no on that. He's going to be more like the touchdown-dependent tight ends that we take late in redraft leagues, and we're not excited to start on a weekly basis in dynasty leagues.
I mean, the biggest thing is that just the position he plays and the way it is structured in fantasy football is that if you're not one of the guys, you're one of just the guys.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the movie Just One of the Guys?
No.
Really? Dave, you've seen that, right?
Of course.
Oh, it's great. Heath, have you seen it?
No, I don't think so.
No. Well, spoiler alert, Heath, she's a girl, but she dresses up as a guy. But it's a great, great 80s flick. Let's talk about Dalton Schultz. I don't know any movies that have Dalton or Schultz in the title, but where are you? It seems like you're low on Dalton Schultz, Rich. You have him outside, like that whole tier of Hockenson, Goddard, Fant, Knox, Okwebanom, Freiermuth, Smith Jr., Komet, McBride. You have Dalton Schultz outside of that tier, right behind that?
Yeah, and it's because he's a little older than those guys and doesn't have the contractual leverage. I mean, he's just playing under the franchise tag, so... And I look at Dalton Schultz, and he's a really solid, dependable player, but I feel a lot like how Austin Hooper was with the Falcons with Dalton Schultz. And, like, he can be taken away. And we're going to find out this year really how good Dalton Schultz is. It's one thing when you can perform when the Cowboys have Amari Cooper on the field and Michael Gallup on the field and Cedric Wilson on the field. But now when it's just you and CeeDee Lamb, and the other team knows it's just you and CeeDee Lamb, like, we're going to see, like, kind of, like, really how good Dalton Schultz is. So he can win me over this year. This will be a big year for him to kind of prove that, like, I'm wrong. But I consider him very much like I did Austin Hooper when he was in the Falcons.
Okay. And Heath has him seventh in his dynasty rankings. We're about out of time. I'm going to read some emails. I'm going to let Rich go. And Rich, tier one work today. Thank you. Yeah, now if you have some free time, just go watch Just One of the Guys. You're gonna love it.
I'm gonna watch it after this.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
You'll
Rich.
Love the big reveal at the end.
I'm sorry.
You'll love the very, very well said, Dave. Rich, thank you so much. Really appreciate you coming on at Lord Reebs on Twitter. Rich Rebar. Great stuff, man.
I appreciate it, guys.
All right. Now, do you know how to he does know how to exit StreamYard. Okay, good. I didn't know if I had to kick about myself, but he is a professional.
He couldn't wait.
He could not wait. He was like the middle of set. All right. So let's, what'd you say? What was that, Shraggy B?
I said, you're welcome.
Oh, thank you for booting him. Well, sometimes the guests don't know what to do and then it's really awkward. But anyway, this is from Derek. Derek from the Air Capital. Half point PPR.
Where's the
half,
Air Capital?
I don't know. Do you?
No idea. I thought you'd like normally you'd Google it and tell us the answer. My first guess was Denver just because, you know, they have all the crazy stuff underneath the airport, but it might be New York also.
Well, in keeping with the only movie that I ever quote, I'll just say it's Druidia. So half PPR redraft, I have Kupp and Jefferson picks 12 and 13.
That's a good start.
Yeah, and there are 24 keepers. So so after the first 24 picks, he has picks 12 and 13 and Kupp and Jefferson. How should I construct my roster? Do I need to be locked into two running backs at 12 and 13, or should I just go best player available? And we can start up to three running backs and up to four wide receivers. So two running backs, two wide receivers, and a flex, obviously. So he's got Kupp and Jefferson. He's got picks 12 and 13. There are 24 players being kept. What do you do, Dave? Best player available, or do you have to get at least one running back there? What's your advice to Derek?
Yeah, I think I would try and get at least one running back there. So maybe one running back and then the other player, whoever you want. Best player available is fine. But you also don't know how drafts are going to shake out. What if there's two really good wide receivers that are there and there isn't a running back that you love? You pivot. You take the wide receivers. Or maybe it's one wide receiver and one tight end. You go in that direction instead. You should be open, obviously. I think this is just good general fantasy advice overall, is be open to taking good players who slide into your lap and don't force yourself to take a position just because it's so thin. But you are going to need running backs at some point. So if you pass on them at 12 and 13, you can probably expect them to be ugly when you pick again in end of round three, beginning of round four.
All right. Next question from Sean. Where is Sean from, Dave?
Sean is from Dublin, Ohio.
I'm in a 12-team, one-keeper league. Should I keep McCaffrey and get the 7th pick overall or keep Jamar Chase and get the 12th pick overall? Would you rather have McCaffrey in the 7th pick or Chase in the 12th pick?
I think I'd rather McCaffrey in the 7th pick.
Yeah, McCaffrey.
Now, are you sure? Are you reading that right? Is it McCaffrey and he gets the seventh pick, or he gives up the seventh pick?
It says gets.
It says gets. You know, I don't know.
What a generous league.
Heath, Leo gets what movie?
No, I don't know.
Dave?
Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. Rock and roll. All right, from Kevin. Where's he from?
Anderson, California.
Dear Zach, Dallas, Brent, Chad, and Keith.
Those are pitchers.
They are? I
mean, probably.
Yeah. Tight ends.
That feels more right. I don't
Philadelphia
know.
Philadelphia tight ends?
I was thinking Astros pitchers.
Philadelphia
first.
Eagles tight ends.
Ah, okay.
Ertz, Goddard, Brent Celek, Chad Lewis, Keith Jackson.
Chad Lewis, I wouldn't have gotten that. But Leo Getz, I would have. Full point PPR, 12-team Dynasty League. Should I trade Derrick Henry and Tyreek Hill for rookie pick 101 and Jerry Jeudy? Wow. I'm the defending champ, and I'm looking to turn over my roster a bit while staying competitive. So he's got Henry and Tyreek Hill. Give those up for pick 101 and Jerry Jeudy.
I think it's close. I really do. It doesn't seem close right now, but a year or two from now, I think you might love that you made this trade. I would try and squeeze for a little more than 101 in Jeudy, though.
Do it. Do it.
Do it. Okay. By the way, question from...
Does the trade chart say to do it?
Oh, yeah. Brees Hall is the best player in the deal.
Scott wants to know how Dave picks the cities that people are from.
Telling listeners where they're at.
Bill from Delaware.
That's just Dave Richard stats.
Yeah, that's right. I cut up the Azer stats song. Everybody's got a little verse in there. But
remember that song somebody sent in? What's Heath smoking?
Yeah, same guy.
I don't know why you didn't ever play that. That was so good.
It was
such a great
really
song.
Good, really good. How do you pick that, Dave?
You just off the top of my head, usually.
All right, this one is from, I don't have a name, but I do have, this guy is from Keenan Allen's hometown.
Where is Keenan Allen from? I don't know where Keenan Allen is.
Well, give me a name at least.
I think he's a Cali boy. Let's go with Jim Bob from Truckee, California.
Okay. He says, dear Boomy, Momo, Appa, and Eero. Oh, that's this is that Avatar Airbender thing, I think. Everybody's telling me I need to see. 10-team PPR Dynasty League going into our second year. We did an auction draft last year. I drafted really well for depth, but I could use some elite talent. It's a 1QB league, but we're transitioning to a 2QB league after this season. So he has Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, and Jalen Hurts. It's 1QB this year. It'll be 2QBs next year. Should I trade Jalen Hurts for a 2023 first-round pick? The guy's team is pretty bad and may be rebuilding, so it could be a high pick next year. And I already have two first-round picks in 2023. So I would have, he wrote two, but I think he'd have three. Would you give up Jalen Hurts with, you already have Wilson and Watson, would you give up Hurts for next year, round one pick, Heath?
I think I probably would in this situation. I think that the problem is if Jalen Hurts is as good as I think that he might be this year, then he's worth more than a 2023 first in a super flex league. If he's a top six fantasy quarterback this year and solidified as the Eagles quarterback moving forward, then he might be worth multiple 2023 firsts. So I think you have a chance of losing some value, but there's also some risk in what happens with Hurts. This year, he's not helping you win the championship because you have Wilson and Watson, so you're probably going to be great at quarterback anyway in a one quarterback league. And I do like the I like storing that value in the 2023 pick better.
Yeah, this is a trade you make. And I know that Hurts does have potential in fantasy to be outstanding. He can have a good fantasy year and still not have a good year for Philadelphia, and the Eagles could move on from him. So I don't think just because he's great for fantasy means that he's going to be great for Philadelphia for the next 5+ years. I would take the chance on the 2023 first round pick. You would now have three. You could conceivably take one of the quarterbacks next year, and then the clock starts on that guy for the next 5 years. I also could not have been more wrong on where Keenan Allen is from. He's from the complete other side of the country, Greensboro, North Carolina.
Ah, yeah, I would have guessed California too, for sure.
Because he went to Cal.
Right. Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'm thinking to myself, how many players go to Cal that aren't from California.
Well, he plays in California. He went to Cal. So he has a Cal vibe to him. He's a Cal vibe.
Yeah. But
Greensboro is the California of North Carolina.
That's what I hear. Yeah. All right, man. Thank you so much to Dave and Heath and Rich Rebar and Ben Schrager. This was a really fun show. I know y'all like the Dynasty content, and within the Dynasty content, I think there's plenty of redraft talk as well. There's so much that overlaps. So even if you don't play in Dynasty, this stuff is helpful, I think, and hopefully anyway, and I hope y'all enjoyed it. We'll talk to you on Thursday as we review last week's mock draft with the rookies. We'll talk to you then. Thanks again, everybody. Have a great day. See you in a couple of days.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.